No, I just finally finished moving. That was the big deal of my year. I think I spent 6 months moving and we're finally done. There's nothing left at my old house anymore. It's listed for sale. I'm done.
Wow.
That's
Are you gonna buy
been
it?
my entire buy my own house.
Yeah.
That sounds like a clever tax dodge, but no, probably not. I'm gonna sell it to somebody else.
That's like something an NFT person would recommend. It's like if you buy your own house, that's just money in the bank. That's pure profit, baby.
Do you own any NFTs?
No, I don't like NFTs. Okay, so let me rant real quick. I believe there could be a world or an application where NFTs are valuable and have legitimate uses. I believe that it could be the case. And you know, you might be thinking to me, Spencer, you're stupid. That's stupid. Whatever. Not you, but you know, the audience. But you know, the idea of a digital object that can be taken out of its context, its walled garden of technology, you know, the Apple Store or whatever, and then placed into another digital context where it makes sense for that to be a distinct object rather than copies of the object in different walled gardens. I think there could be some use for that. I don't know. And I certainly don't think anyone is trying to find it. And I certainly don't think anyone really wants to make it into a real useful thing. They just, you know, it's like they already made the blockchain. So they're like, how can we get people more invested in the blockchain? What about this? It's not just money. Now it's trading cards, you know, and like, and so I think they're just trying to get people into the economy, and kind of turn people onto it more than they have any real. It's like a solution in need of a problem, you know. To the extent, I don't think Bitcoin or, you know, blockchain is super useful, but if you want to use it for something, money makes some amount of sense because it's like at least that makes sense there. You're not just counterfeiting money or whatever. You can track it moving around, whatever. That has some idea to me. But the idea of a digital object or an object that's even not digital, like I don't really see any reason to that, to do that. Like, you know, I have a Rick and Morty collectible sweater that has a unique identifier number, you know, a collector's number. This is one of 150 or whatever, you know, and it's like that the technology of authentication exists. It even exists in a digital sphere in the form of, you know, two-factor authentication, encryption. You know, there's ways to authenticate systems that don't require the use of a blockchain. But the only reason they're kind of delving into the space is, well, we have this already. What else can we do with it? But they don't have any unique, interesting ideas. Now, you know, are you familiar with the anime Yu-Gi-Oh?
Yes. Not
Okay.
intimately, but yeah, I'm familiar with it.
So in Yu-Gi-Oh, they have a deck of cards. Then they do these virtual reality cyber duels where they have this thing on their arm that's like it's like a game board essentially that you place the cards into, and then holograms project those images in reality, and then it looks like you have a giant fucking dragon in front of you, and it punches, you know, a golem in the face or something, you know? So in the world of Yu-Gi-Oh, Yu-Gi-Oh is the most, it's the card game is called Duel Monsters, but it's the most important thing in the entire universe of Yu-Gi-Oh. You know, it's like if someone cheats on your girl, you're gonna duel him in the streets. You know, it's like when a corporate merger is set to take place, you know, the CEOs will duel over you know, the fates of who's gonna control the company. Like, you know, it's like it imagines a world, you know, a lot of anime does this. It imagines a world where what if this was the biggest thing in the world? Like the Prince of Tennis is like, what if everyone solved their problems through tennis? You know, whatever. It's just kind of like an anime trope that exists is like, what if this were everything and all of society were structured around it? If we lived in a Yu-Gi-Oh world, there could be value in making Yu-Gi-Oh cards NFTs that you get. It's there. You can put them into digital. You can take them out and put them into a real physical card. And, you know, you don't have to go to one dual disc manufacturer. Maybe you go into a dual arena that's made by this company. And so you take your NFTs into it and plug it into that system. You know, maybe your NFT or maybe your dual monster cards have different AIs because the dragon is more aggressive than the foot soldier. And, you know, maybe having those AIs persist as opposed to being copies of each other based on, you know, your stylistic future aesthetics for needs for what you need an AI for. Maybe an NFT could be useful in that context because you take, you know, your home AI out and then you actually put it into your car and now it's driving your car and the dragon likes to go fast. And, you know, I don't know, you know, like in this crazy future world, I can see where some sort of digital construct that's the bedrock of society, you know, could be used to kind of move around. But generally, there's no reason you can't just copy a digital object and then put it into another context. You know, even from obviously the supposed goal is decentralization, but you know, no one necessarily wants decentralization as a means to an end. Like, people are fine having their iPad apps be iPad apps and not being on an Android phone, you know, and Apple wants that too. Like, they would rather run, you know, this other system, and then they put their shit in that system, then be all like, oh, you can take this out of our system and put it in a different system. You know, like, there's like, I don't think there's any real incentive. And even consumers, it's more complicated to have the, you know, to have these systems capable of that level of sophistication and modularization, where you can just take out an NFT and plug it into your car, or, you know, take out your trading card and make it your web page, or I don't know. You know, it's like, I just don't see, like, it the way things work through at least Apple, like, it functions pretty well for consumers, and they like that there's kind of the only one store. Like, I can, obviously there's problems with monopolization and stuff, but I think, like, all of that's a value add for a consumer, and plugging into the blockchain is kind of a value subtract, because it just gives you this level of sophistication that you just generally don't need in that kind of is like retrograde to your consumer experience that you want. Like, certainly, you know, you probably know at least a little bit about crypto. Like, using crypto interfaces, wallets and stuff, it's all fucking a nightmare. Like, it's not easy. The best solutions are still at least a little bit of a hassle. Like, if you compare it to, say, like Robinhood or something, like the stock trading app, like, Robinhood just works how you expect it to. Whereas, like, a lot of the storefronts and wallets and stuff just don't. Like, that's not what you want. You don't want to be able to lose your password to your money, and then you just never have your money ever again. You know, like, there's like, a lot of the features are negative features, you know. And so, like, again, I can imagine uses, hypothetical uses of the stuff that actually does provide value, but I just don't see, like, everything you can do with an NFT you could also just do with an encrypted hash code that can be authenticated through a third-party service. Then it's like, oh yeah, this is the real ape. What are they, trash apes or whatever? This is the real trash ape. Look, it has the right code or whatever, you know. And then you don't have to use the blockchain, but you've done the same thing. You can limit the access of the unique hashes and stuff. It, like, there's ways to do this that do the same exact function. They're not necessarily as elaborate, because they don't use this intentionally elaborate, but the reason it's intentionally elaborate is because it's supposed to be for money. You know, it's like, you can't take away that security from money. Like, but in trading cards, you don't need it, you know. And that, you know, NFTs are essentially trading cards. And if you don't know what NFTs are, I'm so sorry. It's been, what, like 15 minutes of me talking about the ramifications of something you probably don't understand. So, but yeah, that's the Patreon. And now it's time for what everyone wanted. My big full-length interview with Kevin. Well, that's actually what this episode is a full-length interview with Kevin. Man, this episode hasn't been very funny, huh? It's not like there's been no jokes, but mostly it's been real nuts and bolts talk on food and such. You know, it's been pretty straight. So whatever. But yeah, so Kevin, tell me about your early life.
I was born in Baltimore, Maryland. I moved to Nebraska when I was 5. Mm-hmm. I lived in Nebraska until I was 19 and moved to Chicago when I got a job at Midway Games to be a video game designer. That wasn't initially what I started there for. I was started there just as an IT guy, but kind of quickly moved over to doing game work.
So what kind of game design did you do? Like, coding or what?
Yeah, I was primarily a programmer. I started out doing, Midway had this line of touchscreen games, like, you know, and the sitting on top of a bar, like, it's got trivia and card games and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I did Midway's version of that. So
that's cool.
Designed the whole, like, kind of operating system for it, and the graphics and the sound and all that.
That's all the time we have. Hey. What's up? Hey there. How's it going, folks? The name is DJ Horny Smooth, coming to you live on WKUK The Cuck, where we play the hottest beats, the coolest treats, and the saltiest feats, baby. Oh yeah. And you know, we be sucking on toes. But I'm not in the studio alone. Today I'm joined with the mighty audio, video, technological, completely non-fungible Kevin Day. What up,
Kevin? Hey, everybody. Hey, just thinking about sucking on some toes. That's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Kevin's going to throw some toes in a sous vide bag.
An extra little kick. Yeah. You miss it if it's not there.
Oh, yeah, baby. That's right. But that's not all. It takes more than two to tango when you're talking about that happens. So we're got in the studio today a sexy, sensual, a swarthy, smoking, cerebral, serotonin-infused muscle man known as Abed Geef.
Hi there. Is there two cameras of me? You know what I mean? Sure. It's like in every job. It's like you got that character in the office that's like, this is the anti-Spencer. And he's like, he's gunning for you, you know?
Well, I feel like I can imagine that happening to you a lot. Like, that's not something that I have had, like, a lot of people that are like, oh, I got to ruin this guy, you know? But I don't know. Like, I feel like you can maybe rub someone the wrong way, and then they're like, ah, I'm a weird neurotic guy. Now I'm going to hate you and pursue you, you know?
I've had many jobs where there's like, I mean, I don't know, this isn't a big deal.
That's what I'm saying. You have.
I was working in a video store, right? And this guy got mad because I was talking to my friends and we had to close in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then he punched me in the stomach.
Yeah. So is that a nemesis from then on?
Or is that just a guy that punched you in the stomach? You create these situations where someone irrational is like thinking irrationally. There's nothing you can rationally do.
Yeah. 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 People love to get violent. You know, I think that some people look more vulnerable than others. I'm not saying that it's a good thing. I'm saying that I do not get fucked with when I walk down the street, but when I walk down the street with one of my friends, he gets fucked with, and I'm like, what? So some people are just walking down the street getting fucked with? Like, that's such a weird experience.
Because I saw you one time like walking down the street,
actually. Sure.
And you did have like a look about you, like you were like the Punisher. You didn't care. You know, like if someone got in your way, like a little old lady, it mm-hmm. wouldn't matter. It would be like, get out of the way, granny.
Yeah, I just step right. I just blast her into a wall or something. No, I don't know. I mean, maybe I do. It's not something I think about, but maybe I do. Yeah.
Well, I sometimes think about the granny being the problem. Like, I just go, why is this granny here? Why is she placed in front of me? Like I have
she should be blasted into a wall instead. I wish she was in this wall, and then I just blast. You know, I blast and I blast, and you know that's you what have happens.
A habit of making these grandma walls. Walls yeah.
So I start blasting. So Abed, what have you been up to lately?
Oh, I mean a lot of things, mainly a few things. Then probably. Oh. Less than those things. Well, but like right in that nice medium zone of not too many things, but not enough things.
Sure.
I guess that's
awesome.
They're just things, right?
I don't, it does it that to me, that means nothing. Like that's the least the most meaningless like way you could have answered that question, which is not a bad thing. But if you're asking me what I, you know, what it meant to me, that's what it meant, you know?
Yes. In the sense of, you know, meaning something, I meant something that was meaningful in a sort of some kind of thing way.
So, Abed, you got a plant back there on the camera. It just looked like it entered frame. You want to, what's going on there?
At a certain point, I think the way that if I was haunted, I would just have to accept it, you know, like oh, this is happening. Like, like a show.
That raises a question. If you were haunted, would you just accept it? Would you try to do something?
I don't see what, you know, this is a fascinating question because I always think about that. And I go, my reaction is just, if it's going to haunting happen, it'll happen hauntingly. It will just, mm-hmm. The Haunting goes, whether or not you care, The Haunting doesn't care that you had a bad day. You know, it's like, we're gonna haunt. Because you can't be like, oh, come back tomorrow, scary situation. I've had quite a day. I got to put my feet up. Can't think about the house and the doors opening.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I don't know. I would want to be like, look, I'm on your side. You know, you want to make me all scared, or, you know, put Satan inside me, or just throw things around. I don't know, you know, like, that's fine. That's something you want. You know, well, what do I want? Not even important right now. Let's deal with what you want. How can I help? You know, do you need,
it's hard,
you know, you translate. Threw that thing against the wall. Maybe I could throw some other stuff. Is that what you want? You know, like, what can I do for you? You know,
I mean, you're a very giving, haunted person, but I would say that, like, the ghost might not want anything you have.
But I'm just saying, you know, there's no need
to help me, buddy.
Why? You don't need to be adversarial. It's like, hey, you want to, you know, like, what, you got a problem, buddy? Let's talk, you know, let's work this out. I don't want you to have a problem. You're already dead. That's bad enough. Now you got some sort of unfinished business. Let's talk about this. You know,
you're like the ghost therapist. It's like, let's work with your ghostness. Let's just, let's embrace that for a minute. You know, let's think. I mean, what's next? Well, maybe you could ghost this guy. Give him a card.
Yeah. So what was your early life like, Abed? You know, growing up, going to school, what was it like?
What was that movie, Home Alone? Only I didn't get left home alone. I was sort of like the kid from
Home Alone. There was just bandits trying to murder you in school?
No, like his life, but sort of. Oh, yeah. All right, let's look at a snack here. This is a rolled up green cake, Del Ficus. It's from the tree. It's really good. Wait, I see.
How was your life like Home Alone?
Hey, what does Home Alone without being left home alone even mean?
Well, I mean, it means he's fighting people, but he's not. What?
All right, we're gonna have some tea cake and a bit of this, which I don't drink, so I don't.
How is your life like Home Alone?
It's pretty good.
So you're trying to bribe people in D&D. Well, like, bribe the game master, it sounds like.
I'm not actually going to pay him. I'm just sort of like, I'm trying to see if they'll betray the others. Because then that person is the troublemaker. And it's like, is there like a troublemaker in the group? Like,
yeah, and so you've played D&D a lot of times, you said.
I just know, like, someone there's like out to get us. And it's like, it's going to be him before me, or her or she.
We're talking about D&D. Everyone knows how that works. It's the troublemaker. You know, the troublemaker comes around, starts messing things up. You know, that's Dungeons and Dragons. People know what Dungeons and Dragons is. I mean, that's my whole bread and butter.
What's and in the game? Well, I know how to play the game, but in the game, everyone has certain powers, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Were you going somewhere with that?
No, that was just a question.
But you've played Dungeons and Dragons many times, you said.
Yeah. I mean, look, I say many, but you think maybe two or three. But for me, that's many. I played more than that, though, I think.
This is what I mean by you can't be pinned down. Like, you know, you say one thing, almost certainly fully realizing it couldn't possibly be true. But, you know, it feels about right, and it kind of melds into the next thing you're saying. So it's like, this sounds, you know, like, do you do that on purpose? Do you not think about it? Or are you like, just this sounds right? Or, you know, or do you think it's true? And then you're like, wait a second, that's not right at all.
I mean, I guess all of the above, but then none of them, right? I don't think there's a really straight answer for what you're asking me.
See, and those, that's the perfect answer of a man who can't be pinned down, which is what I'm trying to say. You know, like, it's interesting. It's like, have you ever played with one of those water snakes? I think they're called, you know,
water snakes.
Yeah.
I don't like snakes. I wouldn't play near water with snakes.
So water snakes are like this tube, kind of like a macaroni shape of plastic that has liquid in them, and they're made to kind of slip out of your hands and defy your ability to hold them, you know?
Are they snakes? So are you describing objects?
It's an object. It's not a snake. I'm sure water snakes exist. I'm pretty sure they do.
Those are those inflatable fun. I know what you're talking about.
Well, they're not inflatable, but they are, you know, they're kind of like a plastic membrane full of juice, essentially. And they got like glitter in them usually, because then it looks cool when you're like flipping them around in your hands. But that's like what you, is like, you're a water snake. Like, you know,
you're putting,
go ahead.
Category, like, if you see an Emmett Otter, like I'm not that one guy, like the fish that's in the tank. And they're keeping the truck in the back of the tank, you know, cause he's like actually a fish.
And again, these are the words of a man who's impossible to pin down. Well, I don't even know what you were commenting in regards to, let alone what you were saying. Well, I know what you were saying is effectively, you know, like nothing. But I don't know what you were responding to when you said it.
I feel like we're both circling the drain of into the sort of like tube of nothingness. Like there's no like ending in the middle, you know, we're like at a standstill.
Yeah. But, you know, you ever work in a writer's room?
Well, look, I've dabbled, if that's what you mean.
This is like a pretty basic close-ended question, you know, like yes, no, I have once.
Well, I'm not like a scuttle jabber, you know. I'm not like.
Now, what's a scuttle jabber?
What was that?
What's a scuttle jabber?
Skittle counter. I'm not like going there and saying like, all right, here's the problem with this and that and that. You know, I'm like. I'm very easygoing, and I have a good time. I don't rustle feathers or ruffle.
I found some behind the scenes shots from WKRP, and before he died, I contacted the creator of WKRP, Hugh Wilson, and said, "Hey, I found all this stuff. Like, it's him in front of the camera and some of this stuff." And you know, like he got very teary and was like, "You know, I haven't thought about this in so long. I haven't seen this. Like, oh, that's." Joe, the camera guy, I went to his wedding, you know, stuff like that.
That's amazing. That is wow. That's a great
answer. And, you know, fucking Teresa.
Every one of these things that I've come across like this, when I've been able to find the creator of it or somebody involved in it, and I've reached out to them and said, "Hey, I found this old tape. Please don't sue me, but I have the only copy of this thing you made. Would you like a copy of it?" You don't know how many people are like, "I never even saw this thing. Like, I worked for 3 weeks shooting this thing in a jungle somewhere, you know, like one guy. And I never even saw it. And this was the first thing I ever did as an actor. And I've never even seen it. Thank you so much." So not only am I trying to like reconnect people with stuff like that, but I also am just trying to preserve it because, you know, we went to places like the Smithsonian and the Paley Center and all this and said, "Hey, we've got TV and movie gold here. Does anybody want it?" The answer is a sad, "I wish, but we just don't have the manpower to deal with it." So this sort of has become my hobby of like trying to preserve this stuff before these tapes literally just turn to dust.
That's amazing.
Doing God's
like
work.
You might even have like old episodes of The Tonight Show that nobody else
I
has
do. I have this like giant, like it's the size of like a large peach, an old 4-inch quad tape of an episode of the Jack Parr era Tonight Show that I'm trying to get a player for to play.
I would love
you
to
got so much. You got so much completely untouched stuff. You might even have some of Jay's Tonight Show money.
God damn
Jay's Tonight Show money. We should talk about it. You're not going to do the show next week. There's not going to be a show next week on Sunday.
No, we're not doing a live show for any of the Schraub shows. They're all canceled on Sunday, and it's all my fault.
Right. It's because so everyone knows Schraub Home Video, it exists on like a server that you own it or something, or you're renting it or your company or something. Someone's opening it, and next week Kevin has decided to shut it down entirely, the whole server, and like shave it. He wants to shave the server. I don't even know. Do we want to explain what that means? Like, that doesn't even like have a clear meaning to me.
It's like what, you know, Olympic swimmers do. They swim your legs to the extra little bit of speed. Uh-huh. After a while, the dust forms hair, and the hair actually produces wind drag, and that slows the server down.
And so I would think that sort of stuff is part of the normal maintenance of the server room. Like there aren't people coming by cleaning the dust or anything, or is it just over time the hairs just form?
Yeah, over time the hair just forms until it's, you know, you can braid it at some point, and then once it gets to the point you can braid it, it's usually where we say, okay, we got to bring somebody in and get rid of that.
So it's time to admit something. I don't really know what a server is. Yeah, no, I was talking to my friend recently about how I don't know why this is. When I was young, I was a lot more socialized than I became as I kind of grew up and as a, like, you know, a kid, not like an adult, but it kind of carried over. But like, my parents never had problems with me when I was younger, but at a point they took me to the doctor and were like, we think this kid's autistic. And they were like, well, you know, it's a, they said that they have to like ask questions about when I was a young child, because, you know, even autistic people, they pick up a lot of social cues and learn how to kind of what do they call it, passing or whatever. I don't think it's passing. I can't remember the actual word. Anyway, but so like, so even if they kind of seem normal now, you know, that could just be stuff that they picked up to like cope, as opposed to like actually their autistic traits, you know? So you can, the idea is, yeah, the over time people learn to hide their autistic traits just to kind of get by on social interaction to some extent. And so you want to go to the childhood, like the early ages before that's, those kind of defensive kind of develop. And so when they did that, they asked a lot of questions, and you know, I apparently was very normal, and so my parents were like, oh, I guess he's not autistic, and they're kind of bummed out or whatever. But I don't know, so like, I don't think I'm autistic, although a lot of times when I read about autistic and Asperger people, a lot of the stuff that they're saying like resonates with me on some level. But anyway, I feel like my interactions with humans are not the kind of formative ones that most people have. And so I feel like a lot of what I've like learned socially was not through personal experience, but rather talking to people and learning about them kind of going through similar experiences, and then talking to them, asking them questions about why they were thinking this or that, and then coming to kind of like an intellectual understanding of what that person went through, and then kind of like putting that in my bank of like social knowledge or whatever, you know. So like, as a result, it felt like I never like learned anything, like, or like nothing ever came naturally to me. But, and so maybe this is like a really normal way of development and I'm just like making it sound crazy, but it always felt like, it just felt like nothing was natural to me, but everything that I know is kind of more top of mind, because I'm like, okay, I gotta keep, you know, it's almost like I'm always studying for a test or something. It's like, remember this, that, and that. And then when things come up, it like, it triggers those things. And I'm like, oh, I wonder if it's this kind of concept that I learned about. And so, I don't know, it's a weird kind of like almost outside observer education on human interaction and stuff. And I don't know what that comes from, but it does, that does just like feel like how I, you know, identify. Obviously, I think a lot of people feel like outsiders in various ways, but I feel like this is different than just feeling like an outsider, because it just has to do with like, I don't know, how I relate to social information compared to other people when I seem to talk to them. Anyway, all of this is to say, did you have any high school jobs? No, we got to take a break. We'll be back with more Doughboys. Hey folks, this is Mike Mitchell. I'm here to talk to you today about MeUndies. MeUndies are the freaking underwear that's funderwear. And oh baby, they paid me to say that. That's right folks, MeUndies is back and we're advertising on That Happens, with the caveat that the Doughboys have to do all the ad reads. So that's why I'm here, baby. Hut dog. Use the promo code GoblinFlakes for 20% off MeUndies today. MeUndies. It's the underwear. Hey, Kevin, what the fuck was that? Did you hear that?
I did.
What the fuck was that?
That was, times are tough, Spencer. We gotta make money somehow.
No, it was just, it sounded like a scream. I just heard like a screeching. Did the audience hear that? There was like a screeching, like a woman shrieking, like some sort of curses. What the fuck? Oh my God. Did you play the ad?
I did, yes.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, you got to support our sponsors. So if you ever need, ethereal screamed curses. I don't even know how to describe what I was just hearing. Luck is kind of real. It's not, you know, I don't think that luck is necessarily a mystical force that exists religiously or, you know, superstitiously. But, you know, to the extent that random events happen, there's ways to try and encourage random events happening. It's certainly not like enough to like win the lottery or anything, but you know, or like, yeah, like winning the lottery, you know, you're never going to win the lottery if you don't play it, which is not an endorsement of winning the lottery. But you know, if you want to have the luck of winning the lottery, you'll never get that luck without playing it, you know, or I don't know, whatever, you know, I'm finding all these holes in this rant right now. So I'm going to try and, you know, try and find, move past them instead of highlighting them and try and on the fly improvise some reason why it's not actually a plot hole in my story. But anyway, I think of luck as like in Donnie Darko, there was that kind of weird distortion line that would go out of Donnie Darko's chest or whatever. It was kind of like their future line of them moving through time or something like that. Or like in Family Circus, the Sunday, you know, the newspaper cartoon, there are sometimes these Sunday issues of the kid, like it was just a house, like a picture of their house or a map of their house with like the dotted line of the kid's path walking through, you know, the whole house, and they go in the freaking pond and then they go to the toilet and grab all the toilet paper, you know, whatever. But you know, if you imagine your life as like this line that your physical body is moving through in the world, like, you know, when your car is moving on a map app or whatever, you know, we're a line that exists through time. You know, yesterday I was in bed, you know, today I was on the road, you know, etc. You know, that line is like a line that intersects with other lines because people have an interaction. Right now we're intersecting. You know, my line moved to this chair and it brought me to this intersection online with you who have also moved in your chair. And so because of actions we've taken, we've arrived in this interaction that has happened because of choices we've made. And so it's not like that's luck because that's intention. But on some level, every interaction we ever have, whether that's, you know, talking to Dan Harmon or, you know, like having someone buy a script or something, or getting a job, you know, or meeting someone who knows a job that you could apply for, or even just the simple concrete act of getting in a car accident. It's all based on that line. If you leave the house at 10:45 and, you know, 3 minutes later in your car, you get sideswiped, you wouldn't have gotten hit by that car if you left the house 3 minutes earlier, because his line doesn't intersect with your line at the same time. You know, you're going through the road on your specific time frame and he's going through the road on his specific time frame, and you intersect because you're literally in the same place at the same time. But everything that happens can be seen as this kind of intersection. You know, again, me with Dan Harmon, a script, you know, and all opportunities are intersections, but they're intersections that are contingent on where our lines are going. If you want to meet people at a bar, your line has to go into a bar. Otherwise, it's not going to intersect with people at a bar. You know, you're never going to meet people in a bar if you're not in a bar. You know, this is kind of obvious, but like to the extent that we're talking about luck and having lucky occurrences, what you do with your time and how you move about it can encourage or maximize your chance of increasing interactions and intersections with people, or it cannot. You know, for the vast majority of my life, I've just like literally stayed in my room. Even nowadays, I literally stay in my room. Very few interactions and intersections can happen in my room unless I'm interacting online, but you know, that's kind of different. But you know, like all those things are a result of where I've moved in my world and in world. And I'm not trying to say that like I deserve anything that's happened to me because the way I've moved my line is actually a good way and I'm doing it right and other people just don't know how to do it, because that's insane. But you know, there's a lot of people who get lucky but just not kind of lucky enough to really break through and stuff. But to the extent that you can kind of focus your life to open itself up to opportunities by getting involved in things that could lead to opportunities, you can kind of maximize your luck. I think when a lot of artists and creatives talk about the advice of just keep creating, man, just keep writing, just keep making stuff, I think like the real weight of that advice is kind of more what I'm talking about here. Because if you make a production, you have to find someone who knows how to use lights and hold a camera. You're making those intersections that I'm talking about, and you're increasing the chances that one of those is going to pay off. And again, one of the guys might have a job you can apply for. One of the guys might know a guy that'll read your script, whatever. But so like, I think that, you know, I don't know why the people say that specific vice. Obviously, it's good to train, you know, to get experience and learn what you're doing too. But I think that a big part of it is, you know, they just got lucky because while they were doing the stuff over and over, they finally found a lucky break. And again, a lot of times the people are allowed to grind that hard because they come from some amount of privilege and get support from their parents or whatever. You know, I don't know. But like I talked to, we had a the No One Can Know About This guys last week. And, you know, we've talked to them about how they feel so lucky that they met me, and, you know, they feel really lucky about this connection that they made with me. And we only made that connection because they did the podcast, and they only did the podcast because they were like, we got to make something. Everyone says you got to make something. We're writing these scripts, but we're not like creating anything. And we can't give these scripts. You know, there's no one we know to give these scripts to. So we got to do something because, like, how are we going to, you got to make something. So it's like, they were kind of feeling what I'm talking about, which is like, we can't make our own luck without like putting ourselves out there or whatever. And so again, it's not saying that, like, you know, you can master your own luck if you do the right thing, like I'm saying, but it's just that I think that a lot of this kind of creative advice kind of lives in this realm where it's simultaneously about growing your skills and kind of putting you in places and circumstances that might lend you to getting lucky. Because at the end of the day, all this stuff's about luck. You can be as talented or untalented as you want. I certainly, you know, I'm not an actor, and I was in two TV shows, and I really shit the bed, but, you know, it had nothing to do with my skill. It was all just random chance and luck, and the fact that I had known Dan, you know, at that point, and I got to know Dan, and I only knew Dan because, you know, I went to the show, and I only went to the show because I missed the show the previous week because I missed Dan's tweet on Twitter that he was doing the show, because every Harmontown before that one show, he tweeted every night, they're like, though, tonight's the night, here's where you can buy tickets. And I didn't see the tweet because he didn't tweet it that one night. And I tweeted at him, hey man, I was going to go to your show, but you didn't tweet that the show was happening that night. And he tweeted me, I'm sorry. And then I was like, because of that interaction, I was like, now I'm definitely going to go to this next show. And that was the show that I went that became, you know, the famous show. If I went the week before, I wouldn't have gone the week after, you know, because I can't just go to LA every week and pay money to see a comedy show. You know, I probably wouldn't have gone both times. So I could have gone the week before and then not been there for the D&D night where, you know, my expertise became relevant and stuff. And that's all completely dumb luck and stuff. But anyway, and so it's like, I'm not trying to say like I did it right. I know I'm just privileged and lucky and stuff, but I think that, you know, people don't necessarily like hearing the advice, oh, just keep trying and maybe eventually you'll break through. And I think it's just, there's a bit more nuance to it than I made it, so maybe someday you will too, haha, you know, which is, I think, a valid interpretation of that advice a lot of times.
And I love going through the menus, but here's the problem. Everybody, menus go through phases, I found, and they become a menu trend. And now, if I see it again, and I know I'm going to a million times, appetizers, they're not called appetizers, Spencer.
They're called small, you know, bites.
Sometimes, but you know what they're really called? Almost, I'm going to say 85% of the time.
Appetizers? Shareables. No. That's what you're going to say.
Shareables.
Shareables.
Oh, fuck you, shareables. First of all, if I get spring rolls, I'm not sharing these motherfuckers. Those are my spring rolls. But just what's the appeal of a shareable?
I don't know.
Everything on technically everything is a shareable. A cup of coffee is shareable. So that's just a stupid fucking umbrella statement. It's a meaningless platitude. I don't like it.
I guess appetizers must be like testing poorly or something, you know. But yeah, shareables is so stupid.
Is this a hot take?
That shareables are the Karens of the sit down restaurant menu? And does that make sense?
It does. Yeah. I mean, in the sense that I want to slap both of them. I want to slap Karen and I want to slap shareable. I don't want to
only on behalf of, you know, oppressed minorities and stuff.
Yeah. Shareables. It's just, I think they're being cute and clever. I remember the very first time I saw appetizers on a menu. I was young, and I thought, okay, now we're talking. Like now we're having fun. or appetizers. Like, that's stupid, because we've talked about my love-hate relationship with portmanteau before.
Sure, know? Yeah.
So appetizers, I give a pass on appetizers, but clearly we're past appetizers. One time I saw a menu that said snack-a-teasers, not even snack-a-tizers. Because I've seen snack-a-tizers and I've seen appetizers, but one said snack-a-teasers.
I was like, snack-a-teasers.
That's you flew too close to the sun on that one. That's jumping the shark.
If someone comes up to me and is trying to snack a tease me, my guard is instantly raised. Like, I don't want anyone doing that many different things to me, to to appetize me. You know, like, I don't. That's too much.
To snack a tease. I think we've talked about this before, but my favorite was Steve O'Donnell, the great comedy writer from Letterman and everything. Mm-hmm. He and I would text each other or voicemail each other back in the day. And he's like, Jeff, I'm on a Sky Mall. I'm reading a Sky Mall magazine while I'm taxiing on an airplane. And I'm reading about an electric blanket that boasts of its stimulaxing qualities. Stimulaxing is the snack-a-teasers of electric blanket technology.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's shareables, fucking hate. And then also, they're not called sandwiches anymore, Spencer. Often it'll say sandwiches and wraps.
They're called handhelds.
Handhelds!
Handhelds!
I want to punch my own balls right now.
Why is it so hand... Why is it, you know, why is the thing, you look at these foods and you're like, oh, these are handholdable. Like, why is that I don't know.
Hey, waiter, can I get some handhelds? Oh, you mean a knife and fork? Yes, exactly. Well, you know what? Can you put my coffee in a handheld? Oh, you mean a mug? That'd be ideal.
But that's the thing, is that handhelds almost implies that food on a menu is being it's being divided by how you operate on it. So you got, you know, your forked bowls, you got your handhelds, you got your plate, your plate cuttables. Naturally, plate you have your, you know, the plate cuttables, they should be steak.
They should be stabbables.
Stabbables, forkables, scoopables.
Anything else? Spoonables?
Pourables for like drinks. Pourables.
Yeah, drinks or pourables. Sip-em-ups. Yeah, beverages are not called sip-em-ups. Anything that you eat with knife and fork is called stab-ems. And anything that you have, to, like a French fry, sorry, but by the letter of the law, handheld. French fries are now handhelds, you motherfuckers.
French fries are handhelds because of the cup. Or because you hold the hand. You hold the fry with your hands. That's what you mean.
French fries aren't stabbables. They're not stabbables.
They're not scoopables. They're
fucking handhelds.
They're handhelds.
Also, asterisk shareable. Because you fucking don't ever eat French fries with Rob Schraub. Have I complained about this before?
No, do tell.
Rob Schraub and I went to Bird's Cafe, Bird's Restaurant on Franklin and Hollywood.
Never been. I've always wanted to go.
It's pretty good. And they have lovely curly fries. And I'm not normally, like, I don't go out of my way for curly fries, but their curly fries are good.
I love a curly fry.
And they got really good ranch dressing. And it's great dip-ems and great handhelds. And but shareable, here's a problem. I ordered some French fries, and Rob had some. Motherfucker never stopped eating my French fries. Like, he was chewing one and picking up another one, and then putting it in his mouth as he was swallowing that one, and then and immediately, like a conveyor belt, like I Love Lucy, the chocolates. Like, he just, his hand never stopped going back and forth from the plate to his mouth. And I just sat there in breathless wonder. And I was like, motherfucker. I was like, should I order you some fries? He's like, hey, man. He got all bummed out about it. I overreacted because, yes, we can order more fries. But I was like, bitch, like,
you can't be more active on someone else's food than they are until, like, the end of the food's life. You know, like, once it's the end of the dinner, then it's like I'll start really mowing the chips off someone's table or something. But, you know, not in the beginning.
He was eating the fries like they were his fries.
Right.
But then And again, the fries were not under shareables on the menu. It was just
those were sides.
Yeah, those were sides. Like, I'm putting this to my side of the table, and if I want you to have some, like, yeah, well, you will get an engraved invitation. You know what I think is really alarming is that the NRA is trying to like soften the image of assault rifles by not they don't want them to be called assault rifles anymore. You know what they're calling them now?
No.
Handheld. And you know what they call bullets?
Shareables. You know, it's surprising is what I'm saying.
It worked out well for me because a lot of people think I get constantly asked what my real name is. And I'm like, Abby is my real name. But then I realized because I post a bunch of photos on Instagram of my abs that people think I'm an asshole and that I named myself Abby because I have abs. And then I only post ab pictures. It's terrible. It's embarrassing. Yeah,
that's, you know what your porn name should be is Abby McGee. Oh, I'm Abby McGee. Let me suck your dick.
Yeah.
Oh, what if I'm sounded like your balls.
That? I've been talking about people liking Sprite Remix as a bit. Like, that guy looks like he'd like Sprite Remix. And then I didn't know that it was like an expired thing because I was trying to find it to see if the people I said that about would be excited when I brought it over.
But, you're telling people that they look like me. This guy looks like he likes Sprite Remix.
Yeah. What the fuck? Because it's like kind of an insult, right? Like, it's just funny.
My man looking like he likes Sprite Remix.
Yeah.
I have a pitch that I wanted to talk about. It's like a movie pitch maybe, or I don't know. You know, and honestly, I don't know. I guess it works best as like a comedy video. Hey, Kevin, maybe
a comedy video
and put it on the Shrapnel video. It's a short. But okay. So it's like, you know, it's an apocalypse. We're panning across apocalypse and we're hearing like, you know, the news being like, reports are spreading of lightning strikes hitting people in large numbers. It seems to be, you wouldn't believe this. I can't believe what I'm reading here. It says that it's contagious. And, you know, it's like in 2020, lightning storm struck like never before. This time it was contagious. And, you know, a guy gets hit by lightning in the street and they're like, you know, oh my God, he falls down and they're like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, no, I think I'm okay. And he gets up and he starts to walk around and then people are like, Jesus Christ. And then all the people get hit by lightnings that were around him. Because it's contagious. And then it's like, you know, then we cut to the world is just ruined. The world's just over, you know? And like, our group of survivors and we're, oh, okay, go ahead, Abby.
I have a question about
the, Abby okay, has so good does notes.
Does the guy get struck by lightning and then he's like electrocuted? And then as soon as he's like, oh, I got struck by lightning, there's like lightning bolts that fly out of him, like superhero style, and hit everyone else. And then it like, is like a firework from each person to each person.
I could go either way, but I do think it's funnier if it's lightning from the sky. It just keeps hitting more people just solely based on nothing else, but essentially like proximity, you know, because it's contagious lightning. And then, you know, so then it's the zombie apocalypse, but for contagious lightning, you know, and we're meeting the crew, you know, we meet this guy and the leader and the tech guy and the... Yeah, a bunch of people are getting killed.
But then they're like electrified ghosts or zombies.
What happened to Kevin?
I don't know.
He hated your movie pitch.
Kevin turned into a ghost. I don't know. I guess I'll continue because we're going live and also doing a podcast. But no. So okay. So you know, you get to the end of the trailer would be the crew is like, you know, making their way. Oh, we got to find, you know, we're running out of new portable water. They said there's good water over by Bears Creek or whatever, you know. And you hear like lightning go off, you know, and one of the crew comes in and he's like, you know, his hair's like all standing up, you know, and they're like, oh my God, what happened? And they're like, oh, nothing. You know, I had my shoes off on a bare rug. You know, I must have zapped myself, static, like, you know. And they're like, okay, well, come on, you know. And he's like grabbing his backpack as the whole group's running off. And then he like pulls up his shirt and there's like big burn marks, you know, on his under his shirt. And he's like looking back and forth and he runs after the group, you know. And it's like, oh no, he's been bit by the lightning. You know, I think it could be good. In the movie,
the lightning, like the lightning, like the happening.
The lightning, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then like the movie trailer can be like, remember the happening was like, what's happening? The happening. And I'm like, is that lightning? The lightning.
When the lightning first started, no one knew what to make of it. We started to learn to avoid large groups.
I think that it works for a October release. It's like The Mist, but lightning.
Tell us, Kevin Professor, baby. Kevin deepfaked me, you guys. Kevin deepfaked me.
How?
Kevin deepfaked me.
With who? With what?
Kevin deepfaked me. He was doing an edit for the show and he deepfaked me and he sent it to me. And then he sent me he sent me a video of my own face waggling my eyebrows in a way that was like menacing and like, you know, sinister, like he was implying something. And then he made my character kind of look to the right, you know, my deep fake. And then if you look to the right of the video, you saw another attachment that he had. And I clicked that and it was a sex video with a portly gentleman. And I think the implication is he could easily deep fake me into this video, you know, and then suddenly he'd have this deep fake sex scandal through which he can control me, you know, and cancel me. So I'm talking about it. I'm coming to the media, you know, I had to wait until we were live, you know, 45 minutes deep in the show when Kevin's guard had been lowered before I could go live with this incredible tale of survivorship and justice. But
you know, so, I'm going to deepfake this whole conversation to be you confessing to a murder.
No, I know. This is that's why I had to be live. That's my only hope. Speaking of canceled, I had this idea for a thing that I don't know. Maybe this idea exists. A lot of ideas I have, they already exist and stuff. It's a website called the Cancelpedia, and it's like a listing of all the different, you know,
things that are cancelable.
Yeah, no, the things that people like every get, like everyone's and all crimes. The tweets
that they say.
Yeah.
I like that.
Because you can't, if you find out someone's canceled, you can Google canceled or what did they do or stuff. And you can maybe sometimes find little bits of pieces, but because like the news doesn't, you know, want to implicate anyone in crimes or get sued, you know, they kind of go pretty light on the actual details. You kind of have to like go behind the scenes and go into the gossip and comments and stuff to really find out what anyone ever fucking did. And then there's also companies and stuff that scrub reputations online and stuff that's trying to hide all that. So it's like, I don't know. It's not so the problem with this idea, and it is a bad idea, is that it could be weaponized and very dangerous. But I personally,
that was the next question, is like, is this your way of being like, I am pro cancel culture? Reddit is going to tear you apart.
Reddit's going to tear me apart. I'm pro cancel culture. I love it. I
Cancelpedia.
I think we can't get enough, but it would just be because for me personally, I've been like, what did this person do? And I just want to, you know, I don't know. I don't want to, I'm sure it would end up bad for society somehow to make Cancelpedia, but I just want to be like, okay, you know,
I think Michael Richards.
He had some things to say on stage.
He had some things to say on stage. Cancel culture is so weird, but I do think that like some people getting canceled for things that they tweeted, you know, 20 years ago that were like more appropriate at the time. It's unfair to kind of dig up that stuff, kind of the way that, like, you know, when you watch like an old TV show or like Mad TV from like 1999 and you're like, oh my God, they are like In Living Color or any of those shows, and you watch how like racist all the skits are, and it's like, that wasn't like cancelable at the time, but like now it is, you know what I mean?
Your politics are bad and I disagree.
You do?